Vance was able at the vice presidential debate to say the world looks pretty chaotic right now, and it's not former President Trump who's in charge. It is President Biden. And that's an argument that the Trump campaign is very deliberately using to reach out to Americans in the middle and specific groups who feel alienated, whether it's Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, younger voters. And polls do show us recently, Amy, that an increasing majority of Americans are worried about a growing war and want to see greater U.S. diplomacy. We're not seeing a greater public demand for more weapons or more troops being sent to the region.
And what about the possibility, do you see, of Israel striking Iran, specifically perhaps nuclear sites?
You know, I'll think back to a pretty scary phrase I heard from a well-placed U.S. official, Korea bureaucrat working on Middle East policy. This person said to me at the beginning of this week, you know, they described how people inside government who track these issues are, quote, stunned and shocked. And then they said, we feel we're enabling a, quote, nihilistic regional murder spree. Now, that's very strong language, right? A murder spree. But what it tells you is that there's a real sense within government that the U.S. is not going to provide a veto on Israeli actions. I think there is concern about, does it strike nuclear sites and does Iran lash back in a way that's impossible to control? That the sense of a no from the U.S., I think, is very questionable. It's not a guarantee. What you could see the U.S. doing is urge Israel to strike something that looks strategic, but is not necessarily a red line for the Iranians where they feel they have to respond to a huge degree. But that carries its own risks. You've seen the Iranians come out and say, not only would be in response to target Israel, we would target U.S. partners across the region and potentially cripple the global economy, right? They've talked about targeting Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, other partners who are critical to end global energy supplies. So I think the U.S. doesn't know where it's going, but its commitment is very clear in that it wants to send a message to Iran that's overwhelming and military.
Akbar Shahid Ahmed, I want to ask you to stay with us as we talk more about the debate, particularly the last response of J.D. Vance around the issue of January 6th and the insurrection and President Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 election. We'll also be talking about abortion and climate change and more. Akbar is the senior diplomatic correspondent for HuffPost, joining us from D.C. We'll link to your pieces on Lebanon and Gaza. And we want to thank Ori Goldberg for joining us. Ori Goldberg, Israeli political analyst and scholar who's written extensively on Iran, Israel, and the relationship between religion and politics in the Middle East. We'll link to your piece in New Lines magazine, Why Israelis Do and Don't Want War with Hezbollah. Your recent piece for The Nation, for Israeli protesters, Palestine might as well not exist. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, the vice presidential debate. Stay with us. رجال الله في الميدان ووعد صادق أنتم وأنتم نصرنا الآتي وأنتم من جبال الشمس عاتيتنا على العاتي ووعد صادق أنتم وأنتم نصرنا الآتي وأنتم من جبال My Beloved Ones by Julia Boutros. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. We continue our look at last night's vice presidential debate between Minnesota Democratic Governor Tim Walz and Ohio Republican Senator J.D. Vance, facing off in New York in their first and only debate ahead of the election. We'll be spending the rest of the hour airing excerpts and getting analysis. Near the end of the debate, the discussion turned to the January 6th insurrection and Donald Trump's attempts to overturn the 2020 election. J.D. Vance was asked if he would challenge this year's election results, even if every governor certifies the results.
Look, what President Trump has said is that there were problems in 2020. And my own belief is that we should fight about those issues, debate those issues peacefully in the public square. And that's all I've said. And that's all that Donald Trump has said. Remember, he said that on January the 6th, the protesters ought to protest peacefully. And on January the 20th, what happened? Joe Biden became the president. Donald Trump left the White House. And now, of course, unfortunately, we have all of the negative policies that have come from the Harris-Biden administration. I believe that we actually do have a threat to democracy in this country, but unfortunately, it's not the threat to democracy that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz want to talk about. It is the threat of censorship.
This one is troubling to me, and I say that because I think we need to tell the story. Donald Trump refused to acknowledge this, and the fact is that I don't think we can be the frog in the pot and let the boiling water go up. He was very clear. I mean, he lost this election, and he said he didn't. 140 police officers were beaten at the Capitol that day. Some with the American flag, several later died. And it wasn't just in there. In Minnesota, a group gathered on the state capitol grounds in St. Paul and said, we're marching to the governor's residence and there may be casualties. The only person there was my son and his dog, who was rushed out crying by state police. That issue and Mike Pence standing there as they were chanting, hang Mike Pence. Mike Pence made the right decision. So, Senator, it was adjudicated over and over and over. This is one that we are miles apart on. This was a threat to our democracy in a way that we had not seen. And it manifested itself because of Donald Trump's inability to say. He is still saying he didn't lose the election. I would just ask that. Did he lose the 2020 election?
Tim, I'm focused on the future. Did Kamala Harris censor Americans from speaking their mind in the wake of the 2020 COVID situation?
That is a damning non-answer.
That was Tim Walz and J.D. Vance, an excerpt of the CBS vice presidential debate moderated by Norah O'Donnell and Margaret Brennan. Still with us, Akbar Shahid Ahmed, senior diplomatic correspondent for HuffPost based in Washington, D.C. Maybe the most dramatic moment of this debate coming right at the end there. Your response, Akbar.
I think this certainly is the moment that the Harris campaign will be hoping becomes the defining moment of the night. They've already come out and said that based on their analysis of swing voters, this was the moment that turned people off Senator J.D. Vance and, by extension, Donald Trump. I think what's so interesting about the Senator's answer is that it's so stripped of context, right? Historically, J.D. Vance has said, I would have helped Donald Trump remain in power. He said, had I been Mike Pence in that moment, I would not have certified the election results. Additionally, we know that Republicans at a state level across the country, not just Donald Trump, but all the way down through the party, are pushing these kind of stop the steal theories, these ideas that non-citizens are voting, these extensive restrictions, strange ways to kind of increase executive power over the process and inject politics into what's historically been a nonpartisan voting process. So what we know is that Republicans have laid the groundwork to challenge elections again and again, whether it's Donald Trump on the ballot or not. I think this will be the moment that will be referenced repeatedly in the future. J.D. Vance, having made other points he thinks get through to people better, definitely, I'm sure, was grateful that this came at the end and hopes that maybe people by that point had switched off and turned away.
Well, I want to go now to the part of the debate where they took on the climate crisis. The debate took place here in New York as the death toll from Hurricane Helene has reached at least 166. President Biden's expected to visit the Carolinas today, while Vice President Kamala Harris will be in Georgia. During the debate, J.D. Vance described climate change as weird science and express skepticism about the scientific consensus linking rising carbon emissions to the climate crisis.
I think it's important for us, first of all, to say Donald Trump and I support clean air, clean water. We want the environment to be cleaner and safer. But one of the things that I've noticed some of our Democratic friends talking a lot about is a concern about carbon emissions, this idea that carbon emissions drives all of the climate change. Well, let's just say that's true. Just for the sake of argument, so we're not arguing about weird science, let's just say that's true. Well, if you believe that, what would you want to do? The answer is that you'd want to reshore as much American manufacturing as possible, and you'd want to produce as much energy as possible in the United States of America, because we're the cleanest economy in the entire world.
Now, look, coming back to the climate change issue, there's no doubt this thing roared onto the scene faster and stronger than anything we've seen. Senator Vance has said that there's a climate problem in the past. Donald Trump called it a hoax and then joked that these things would make more beachfront property to be able to invest in. What we've seen out of the Harris administration now, the Biden-Harris administration, is we've seen this investment. We've seen massive investments, the biggest in global history that we've seen in the Inflation Reduction Act, has created jobs all across the country. 2,000 in Jeffersonville, Ohio, taking the EV technology that we invented and making it here. 200,000 jobs across the country. The largest solar manufacturing plant in North America sets in Minnesota. But my farmers know climate change is real. They've seen 500-year droughts, 500-year floods back to back.
That was Democratic vice presidential nominee Governor Tim Walz and his Republican challenger, J.D. Vance. Prior to the debate, six youth climate activists were arrested outside CBS headquarters here in New York in a protest calling on the moderators to ask a question about Hurricane Helene and the climate crisis.
I'm fighting for the millions of people who are without power, who have died in this hurricane because big oil is ruining our futures and killing us.
We're joined now by Shiva Rajbhandari, a student climate justice organizer at UNC Chapel Hill. That's the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, spokesperson for the Sunrise Movement, which had also urged CBS to include a question about Hurricane Helene and climate change. Shiva, thanks so much for joining us. You're in heavily hit state by Hurricane Helene. This is, what, the deadliest hurricane in something like 20 years next to Katrina. Talk about the protest and how you feel the two vice presidential candidates responded.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Amy. And that's right. Hurricane Helene is one of the worst climate disasters we've seen in years, certainly this year. Over 160 American lives have been lost, and hundreds, like you said earlier in the show, remain missing right here in North Carolina. And so it is truly a climate disaster caused by big oil. And I think, you know, it gives me a lot of fear for what's to come. First of all, I think the fact that this question was asked, especially in the way that it was asked, it was a major win for our movement. We called on Nora O'Donnell and CBS to prioritize climate. We said, hey, millions of young people across the country care about climate change. It's a voting issue for many, many people. But not only that, it is front of mind for millions more here in the Southeast, where Hurricane Helene has wreaked havoc, from Tampa Bay, Florida, where I was earlier this weekend helping with disaster response, all the way up to the mountains of Appalachia. And I think the response that the candidates gave was telling. First of all, we saw that J.D. Vance, you know, was unable to stand up to Donald Trump's words, just like he was throughout the debate. You know, he refused to say whether he thought climate change was a hoax, and he wouldn't talk about climate disasters like the major threat to American lives, like he would just a few years ago. And I think that's demonstrative of a critical error with J.D. Vance and the Trump-Vance campaign, is that J.D. Vance has no backbone. He is unwilling to stand up to Donald Trump. He is unwilling to, you know, disagree with his running mate. And that is dangerous, not just for the success of, like, a Vance-Trump presidency, but for American democracy as a whole, especially when dealing with a wannabe dictator like Donald Trump, who is essentially sold out to big oil, right? He's a billionaire, and I truly believe he would sell young people just down the river for a couple bucks or just to hang on to power for a little while longer. I think the response that we saw from Tim Walz was strong, but still fell short of my needs as a young person and as a climate justice organizer. You know, we know that climate policies are popular. The Green New Deal is popular. And Tim Walz didn't need to distance himself from that. This all of the above energy strategy is a strategy for death, ultimately.
Shiva, just to be clear, we need a Harris-Walz administration
that's going to take rapid action to stop the climate crisis. We have less than 6 years, and I've seen no plan.
I want to thank you so much for being with us, Shiva Rajandari, student climate justice organizer at UNC Chapel Hill, spokesperson for the Sunrise Movement, which is not officially endorsing Harris, citing a lack of a detailed climate agenda, but has a major campaign aimed at mobilizing 1.5 million young voters to support Harris for president. Coming up, we look at the vice presidential debate issues of immigration and abortion. Back in 20 seconds.
Upload a two-party system. The lesser of two dangers, illusion of choice. Download a veiled form of fascism. Nothing really ever changed. You never had a voice.
Mind by Prince. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. During Tuesday's vice presidential debate, Governor Tim Walz criticized Senator J.D. Vance and Donald Trump for demonizing Haitians living in the city of Springfield, Ohio. The city's been in the national spotlight since Donald Trump made these remarks in his debate with Kamala Harris.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
J.D. Vance has made similar claims despite protests by local Republican officials who say the stories are not true. On Tuesday night, Governor Walz criticized Trump and Vance's comments while answering questions from debate moderator Margaret Brennan of CBS.
Governor, what about our CBS News polling, which does show that a majority of Americans, more than 50%, support mass deportations?
Look, we fix this issue with a bill that is necessary, but the issue on this is what happens when you don't want to solve it. You demonize it. And we saw this. And Senator Vance, and it surprises me on this, talking about and saying, I will create stories to bring attention to this. That vilified a large number of people who were here legally in the community of Springfield. The Republican governor said, it's not true. Don't do it. There's consequences for this. There's consequences. We could come together. Senator Lankford did it. We could come together and solve this if we didn't let Donald Trump continue to make it an issue. And the consequences in Springfield were the governor had to send state law enforcement to escort kindergartners to school. I believe Senator Vance wants to solve this, but by standing with Donald Trump and not working together to find a solution, it becomes a talking point. And when it becomes a talking point like this, we dehumanize and villainize other human beings.
Now, Governor Walz brought up the community of Springfield, and he's very worried about the things that I've said in Springfield. Look, in Springfield, Ohio, and in communities all across this country, you've got schools that are overwhelmed. You've got hospitals that are overwhelmed. You have got housing that is totally unaffordable because we brought in millions of illegal immigrants to compete with Americans for scarce homes. The people that I'm most worried about in Springfield, Ohio, are the American citizens who have had their lives destroyed by Kamala Harris's open border. It is a disgrace, Tim. And I actually think I agree with you. I think you want to solve this problem, but I don't think that Kamala Harris does.
Very interestingly, further on in this debate, J.D. Vance complained about the fact-checking. Margaret Brennan of CBS said, just to clarify for our viewers, Springfield, Ohio does have a large number of Haitian migrants who have legal status, temporary protected status, she said. Vance spoke up to complain about the fact-check. He said, Margaret, the rules were that you were not going to fact-check. And since you're fact-checking me, I think it's important to say what's actually going on, he protested. Well, we're joined right now by Gerlene Joseph, co-founder and executive director of Haitian Bridge Alliance, which recently used an Ohio state law to bring criminal charges against Trump and Vance over their false claims. Gerlene, welcome back to Democracy Now! As they were making these claims, we interviewed you when you came to New York. Now you're in Washington, D.C. You've met with many public officials. Can you respond to what they said, and particularly this criminal complaint you've brought against Trump and Vance in Ohio for endangering the Haitian community?
Thank you so much, Amy. And the reality is they continue to spread those lies even after we have brought criminal charges against them. They must be held accountable. What they are doing, as we have seen over the past few weeks, is creating chaos, creating division, and really making an environment of fear, not only in Springfield, Ohio, in Charleroi, Pennsylvania, in Long Island, New York, in places in California. We cannot allow this to continue, Amy. We have lives at risk. Real people's lives are at risk. And the Haitian community in Springfield and around the country, along with our allies and the people of America, are standing up to say enough is enough. So this criminal charge that we have brought against Mr. Trump and Mr. Vance is really to hold them accountable, make sure that they understand that they are not above the law, and what they are doing is unacceptable as people who are seeking to be really leading this country forward. This cannot be the case.
And can you also talk about what's happened as early as a week ago or less than a week ago, the continued deportations of Haitians back into Haiti, where now, according to the World Food Program, something like one in two people, half the population is suffering severe hunger, not to mention violence?
Thank you, Amy. And I want to make it clear that the Haitian Bridge Alliance is a nonpartisan organization. We have lawsuit filed against President Biden for what happened in Del Rio. And we continue to push back against deportation that President Biden and his administration continues today to Haiti. As you just mentioned, as we see that we continue to deal with extreme political turmoil in Haiti and the famine that is happening right now. And President Biden is in his administration continues to deport Haitians immigrants to Haiti right now. So we are calling on President Biden and his administration to stop the deportation, while we are also calling on Mr. Vance and Mr. Trump to be held accountable for the criminal acts that they continue to terrorize a community and the entire country, for that matter of fact.
Gerlene Joseph, I want to thank you for being with us, co-founder and executive director of Haitian Bridge Alliance. As we continue to look at last night's CBS News vice presidential debate, we turn to the issue of abortion. This is Republican Senator J.D. Vance.
Now, of course, Donald Trump has been very clear that on the abortion policy specifically, that we have a big country and it's diverse. And California has a different viewpoint on this than Georgia. Georgia has a different viewpoint from Arizona. And the proper way to handle this, as messy as democracy sometimes is to let voters make these decisions, let the individual states make their abortion policy. And I think that's what makes the most sense in a very big, a very diverse, and let's be honest, sometimes a very, very messy and divided country.
Governor, would you like to respond and also answer the question about restrictions?
Yeah, well, the question got asked and Donald Trump made the accusation that wasn't true about Minnesota. Well, let me tell you about this idea that there's diverse states. There's a young woman named Amber Thurman. She happened to be in Georgia, a restrictive state. Because of that, she had to travel a long distance to North Carolina to try and get her care. Amber Thurman died in that journey back and forth. The fact of the matter is, how can we as a nation say that your life and your rights, as basic as the right to control your own body, is determined on geography? There's a very real chance. Had Amber Thurman lived in Minnesota, she would be alive today.
So that's Walls. Before that, J.D. Vance. Amy Littlefield is abortion access correspondent at The Nation, independent journalist who covers reproductive health, joining us from Boston. Your response to this discussion and the stance of these candidates?
I thought it was so powerful, Amy, to hear Amber Thurman's name from the debate stage, right? 2 weeks after ProPublica published the report that this young mother had had to travel to North Carolina for an abortion. She'd suffered a complication that's rare when she was back home in Georgia. And because the state of Georgia had made the simple procedure that would have saved her life a felony, She died and left behind a six-year-old child. You know, Walls also could have mentioned Candy Miller, who ProPublica reported who had died with her three-year-old daughter by her side after suffering the same rare complication in a state that banned abortion at 6 weeks. Worth noting, Amy, by the way, that a judge in Georgia just this week struck down the state's six-week abortion ban as unconstitutional, the law that killed Amber Thurman. You know, I have to say, Amy, watching this debate, I felt like I was in a nightmare version of my high school sex ed class, watching, you know, Coach Tim Walls chastise the smug kid in the back of the room who had gotten caught copying off of his classmate's paper. Because what J.D. Vance seemed to be doing in this debate, and frankly, he was very good at it, is trying to co-opt the Democratic talking points that sometimes on abortion and trying to make his stance look moderate, because quite frankly, his own hardline position on abortion has flunked with the American people. You know, he got everyone from Taylor Swift and beyond mad at him, and, you know, cats and women, we don't forget, Amy. We know where J.D. Vance stands on abortion. We know that he spent his Saturday hanging out with leaders of the New Apostolic Reformation, a far-right strain of Christianity that believes that people like you and I who espouse anything that looks left-leaning are literally infested with demons that need to be vanquished through spiritual warfare. This is the kind of company that J.D. Vance keeps. But I'm going to say probably the most terrifying words I've ever said on this program before, Amy, which is J.D. Vance sounded good at trying to convince us that he was more moderate than he actually is on the issue of abortion. Because unlike Donald Trump, J.D. Vance seems quite skilled at code switching. And I have to say, I think the three most frightening words that J.D. Vance said from the debate stage were, "I am 40." Okay? Unlike Donald Trump, not only is he good at code switching and hiding what he actually believes, but J.D. Vance is going to be with us for a long time.
Yeah, I wanted to go to something that was on Vance's website. In July, Jennifer Bendery, the senior politics reporter for HuffPo, tweeted a screenshot from Vance's Senate campaign website before it was wiped that described his views on abortion under the all-caps title, End Abortion. That was on his website. It read in part, "Eliminating abortion is first and foremost about protecting the unborn, but it's also about making our society more pro-child, more pro-family. The historic Dobbs decision puts this new era of society into motion, one that prioritizes family and the sanctity of life." And then last night, Trump tweeted during and after the debate, and it seems like it's the first time he said this, "I would not support a federal abortion ban under any circumstances, would in fact veto it because he wants the states to decide." Your response?
Right. I mean, we know that Vance has said he's sympathetic to the idea that a national abortion ban would be needed to prevent women from traveling out of state in order to seek an abortion. Right. We know that Vance has said of rape and incest exceptions that two wrongs don't make a right. We know, you know, that he is hardline when it comes to being anti-abortion. We know the strategy here because they wrote it down. It's in a more than 900-page document called Project 2025 that talks about the need to ban abortion nationwide, not using an act of Congress or the people, but using the 1873 Comstock Act and reviving that as a de facto ban on mailing abortion pills. So, you know, we have to look at the strategy here and not get distracted by the slick talking points.
And finally, this all happened yesterday. Well, Louisiana instituted the first in the nation law that bans abortion medications, calling them dangerous. And they are used for a number of different issues. The significance of this in 15 seconds.
I mean, we have to look at the recent report from Pregnancy Justice that found that there was a record high number of instances of pregnancy-related prosecutions over the year after the Dobbs decision, at least 210. So this is the collision of the war on drugs with anti-abortion policies that always affects low-income people and the most marginal people first.
Amy Littlefield, abortion access correspondent at The Nation, an independent journalist who covers reproductive health. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Will be doing a four-hour election night special on November 5th, followed by a two-hour morning show the next day. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Masaya Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Tammy Warrenoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Ooh, Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases. From any genre, any day of the week. Visit cjsf.ca for the latest open mic schedule.
Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.